This is Scenic Roots talking writing. Our guests are both poets born in Europe who moved here to America when they were both still young. Finn Billy grew up in Denmark, while Helga Kidder came of age in a small village in the Black Forest in Germany. They've both just published new collections. The King's Coin by Finn Billy addresses directly the notion of dual identity, while Loving the Dead by Helga Kidder is a collection of poems divided into three parts that address loss, both personal and universal. Her next collection, which she's already written, focuses on the confusing question of identity, felt equally by Finn Billy, that inevitably arises when one has roots in two different cultures. Helga Kidder moved to Chattanooga after marrying her husband when she was just 20 years old, in 1965.
Actually, I found the Southern people very similar to the Black Forest people, friendly but reserved. And the only thing the Southern people, they will tell you, come and see us, which we in the Black Forest would not do.
Really?
Yes.
So how do you make friends with people at home?
It's mostly through connections with friends and relatives.
So people are a lot more circumspect about opening their lives to people, huh?
And it used to be that if you married a girl from over the next mountain, she was a total stranger. Mm. Yes.
So it's pretty parochial.
Yes.
Which could be said of Chattanooga also.
I think so. There were a lot of things that I liked about Chattanooga. It was kind of laid back, which suited me perfectly.
What year did you move here?
1965.
1965? Yes. This was a very conservative little southern town at that point, right?
Absolutely, yes.
And very industrial too.
Yes. Yes, well, actually, the scenery was a lot like a Black Forest town. It felt like it, you know, with the Lookout Mountain and Signal Mountain surrounding the city. So I never was really homesick because it felt a lot like home.
Did you speak English when you came?
No. I went to, first I would sit in front of the TV with a dictionary. And I would watch Password with Alan Ludden. And whenever they would bring up a word, I would look it up and they would talk about that particular word. And that helped me a lot. And then I would watch Saturday morning cartoons, which were about the level that I was at.
Mm. Yes. Oh, I can understand that, yeah. Yeah, it's pretty simple language.
Yes.
But you get to hear the way people talk to each other.
Well, yes. A lot of my language is, or especially in the beginning, was the way the people that surrounded me talked.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I picked up mostly. Mm. And so I don't think I have a typical German accent because I never studied it in school where they would teach the British.
Last night I was a child again in Jutland, Denmark, 1942. My mother's milk surged as I suckled and kneaded her distended breast. A growing roar shook window panes. Her dripping nipples swung away. She shuddered, looked outside and up as dark things in a wedge crept by. She wept and trembled, crushed my face into her breast as engine noises dimmed. I sucked in eerie silence, blissful, unaware that German mothers and their children soon would suffer, starve, and die.
Finn, so you were born in 1942, right in the midst of the war. But, for you, it was all long gone before you were aware of all this stuff.
Oh,
right?
Yes.
Right.
Oh, yes. Right. Oh, yes.
And yet your family lived with an occupying force at home.
They did, and they had to move around, and my dad had to find different jobs. But the hardship that might have occurred for my family, I don't think it was so terribly serious. Denmark, after all, was not destroyed. The German forces needed the Danish food. Denmark was a breadbasket for Germany, or one of them. And so occupied but not destroyed. And, you know, the Danish government still kept going, most of the war, not the whole war. And the king still was there.
Mm-hmm.
Christian the X was the king at the time. And so it was very strange, I'm sure, for my parents. But I've got a couple of poems that deal with that as well. Maybe we can get into those lately.
Yeah, absolutely. So when did you move to the States?
Well, I famously or infamously emigrated three times. At age 11, I was immigrated. I didn't have a choice. My dad grabbed his two oldest sons, my brother and myself, and immigrated to California. So we stayed for a couple of years. My mother came over, and then she couldn't handle it with my dad anymore, so she took all four kids and went back to Denmark. So,
and your dad stayed in California?
Yeah, he did. He very quickly became a confirmed American, I think would be correct, acculturated. And my mother went back. I went to high school in Copenhagen. And then I immigrated one more time right after high school and went to California to my dad and went to college in California. And then finally, I immigrated a last time from Copenhagen when I got married in Georgia. Went back to Copenhagen with Jeannie, my wife, and then immigrated one more time from there. I was 26, I think, something like that.
I'm just wondering how it was. It seems to me that high school and then college are both places where we figure out who we are and start creating an identity. So you created one identity in high school in Denmark.
Yeah.
Then you come here.
Right.
You go to college.
That's right.
Almost immediately after. And when you came to college here in America, I'm assuming that people identified you as Danish, right?
Well, yeah, but not so much. I tried to become American and did not identify myself to others as Danish.
Gotcha.
Not at all. I wanted to be integrated, you know.
You spoke English?
And accepted. Yeah, well, yeah. But then, after all that, as a poet, I've been trying to figure out who I am ever since.
Well, haven't we all?
I
hope maybe
still,
that helps.
Yes.
But, I mean, we're all trying to figure that out, aren't we?
Yeah.
I keep wondering for both of you, because you're both so young when you came. I know you said you felt comfortable here, Helga, and it looked familiar, but, man, you must have had culture shock.
Well, I was concentrating on learning the language. I think that was my main thing. And so I was very lucky to be surrounded by people who were educated. So, for instance, 3 years after I came here, I started working at the neurosurgical group. And so I was surrounded by neurosurgeons who were very well educated. And I just learned and did, you know, the way.
Well, I think I'm aware that this book that I just published is really about identity. It's about my two identities, American and my Danish identity. It's more about that than about immigration as such. And so there are poems that occur here and poems that occur there. You know, I struggle with that quite a bit and write in my journal about it. And I've written some stories that are very relevant to this, although only one of those stories has seen print. Otherwise, they've been spoken out, you know, at storytelling events. I've dealt with it quite a bit. And I don't see how I could avoid it, actually.
No, and I wonder if it's true for you. It certainly is for me. There comes a point when you begin to wonder who you are. I think the longer I'm here, the more I realize how much I think like a Brit. And my wife and I sometimes get to loggerheads about that. You know?
Uh-huh.
And then there are those times when we'll be talking about something that's very specific to the culture here. And if I'm critical, all of a sudden, well, you're not American. You know?
That's right.
Well, wait a minute. How does one become an American? How long do I have to live here before I become an American, you know? And yet, you know, as people are parochial and they tend to identify with wherever they live and the culture where they live.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are in any way different from that, you're different.
Mm-hmm.
And you're never going to be able to shake that.
No, yeah. That's true. And I think there comes a point when you kind of embrace that,
mm-hmm.
where you say, okay, that's quite all right. You know, that is me.
Right. And what is the answer to that question if I were to ask you, who is Helga?
Well,
do you identify as a German person or do you identify as an American?
I identify as an American.
Even when you travel abroad?
Yes, even when I travel abroad. And my sister tells me when we talk about anything that is happening in Germany and I voice an opinion and she will say, oh, you think just like an American.
Yeah, I can relate to that.
So that puts me in place.
Yeah.
Well, the worst thing is, you talk like an American.
Yes.
Well, the first time my mother said that to me.
Talk like an American.
Oh, I hear that. I hear that in Denmark. When I speak Danish, which I still do, although my language is eroding somewhat, I will hear that have an American accent. But I'm different from Helga in that respect. When I'm in Denmark, I try to be a Dane in Denmark. And so the dual identity is very much alive with me. I feel better that way. I feel like I can be at home in Denmark and speak Danish, even though people can pick up my southern accent, I suppose.
Yeah. I'm with you. I think that's entirely comforting, and I'm not allowed to do that. For the longest time, negotiated everything here from the point of view of somebody who's on the outside. And I accepted that.
Hmm.
You know? You must have done, Helga, because you had a language barrier aside from anything else.
Oh, yes. But I love the English language, obviously. Or I would not have been able to write poetry. I just loved everything American, even when I was young, because after the war, you had the soldiers, you know, so it was just something that was in a child's mind. So when my uncle asked me, as uncles will do, when I was 11, what do you want to be? And I said, I want to be an American.
Oh, wow.
And so even at that young age, it was something that I was... And I loved, we listened to Radio Luxembourg,
mm-hmm.
on Sunday nights, and they had a lot of English songs and American songs that they played, and I was totally into it, yeah. So when there was an opportunity for when I married this boy, this German boy, and he had lived over here for 3 years, and then he came back to marry me, and I was very much looking forward to coming to the United States, yes.
Oh, I can relate to that. I mean, I grew up with American popular culture and I loved it.
Yes.
And yeah, it was weird. I very much identify with it.
Well, I grew up with American cowboy and Indian movies.
Yeah,
you
me
know.
Too. Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And so America was very much part of my life in that sense. A myth. It was mythological.
Mm-hmm.
The heroic cowboy and the Indians and all of that created an alternate reality for me that I wanted to go to the theater to be there and to be immersed in that. So I came to a mythical land. I think I have that sort of notion in one or two of my poems. The idea that I didn't come to what we think of as America. I came to Hopalong Cassidy, you know, and the Lone Ranger. And then I found the Lone Ranger on TV. And wow, that was great. So...
Well, you settled in California, in a city?
Well, not exactly. It's in the Los Angeles area, but the suburb of Arcadia, which you might be aware of. It's up close to the San Gabriel Mountains. It's really very nice place, very, very conservative. And our aunt, who sponsored us, lived in Arcadia, and that's how we ended up there. This was a protected and also a rather wealthy suburb, which we couldn't afford to live in on our own. So we moved to a little new housing development in Duarte, California. That was an interesting adventure in itself because we lived right next to a desert. I mean, Southern California was supposed to be a desert. And so here we were, and that was very interesting. And we had the mountains real close by. I have a poem in here about damming up a creek up in the San Gabriel Mountains, which for a Danish boy was just really exciting and amazing that all this wilderness could be, you could control a part of the wilderness. And there's hardly any wilderness in Denmark, you know, so this is a whole new thing. But I was very nature-oriented, and so it was very exciting for me.
You know, I think the abiding impression that I have is of abundance and how people took for granted things that to me were luxuries.
Yes.
They just took it for granted. Everybody got that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true.
Did that impress you as well?
Absolutely. We had an apartment with a bathroom. We could buy furniture. I mean, I literally gained 20 pounds because I could go to the grocery store and buy cookies in a bag, and I could eat it all by myself. That was a really big deal. Yeah, the abundance in the grocery stores, that was a major thing, and that I could buy sweets and eat them as many as I wanted to. Of course, being away from home, that had something to do with it as well.
Yes, I understand. The supermarket was like a revelation to mm-hmm. a kid, 11 years old from Denmark, where we bought our food in the city in little tiny shops. We'd go to the you know, the greengrocer and the dairy sale and so on like that.
Yeah, and actually, you know, in Germany, we'd buy a quarter pound of something. And that's, you know, not the amounts that you could buy over here. I mean, it was amazing, really.
It's funny you should bring up the supermarket. Nikita Khrushchev famously said, if they hear about this in Russia, communism's done.
Yes.
What I'm getting then is that this is something that you've written about in your book, Finn. This is of interest to you, and this is something that you're still kind of come to terms with, your identity as a Dane and as an American.
Yeah.
So for you, Helga, that's not something that interests you much to write about, huh?
I had not written about that yet, but I just finished new manuscript, which I call The Learning Curve, and I am dealing with what it was like to come over here. For instance, the first poem is about riding in the plane to the United States and what the feeling was and what the expectations were. And of course, you know, the disappointments I didn't know about yet. So, and in that collection, I'm addressing the issue of what it was like to be a German girl coming to rural Tennessee, practically.
Let's talk about your work. We'll start with you, Finn. So how did you address these feelings in your poetry?
Well, address my feelings connected with real things in the real world. I'm not a journalist, and so I really am in some ways very fundamentally a poet in the sense that, well, I don't so much write about something. I write something, if that makes any sense
to you. It does. Flannery O'Connor was quoted as saying, I don't know what I think until I write it.
Right.
Is that true for you too?
Yes, that is. I start with an idea and an image and maybe some rhythm, and then I write and write and write, and something emerges. And then I might even say more or less to myself, I didn't know it was about that. And then it emerges. This poem, Our Mountain Stream, I thought might be interesting to read that because of the family and nature. Our Mountain Stream. Every time I see the portrait of my dad smiling awkwardly within an ornate golden frame, his formal suit of pinstripe blue, shirt white and tie Old Glory bright, red as the native Danish flag. Every time I see him captured there, I want to break him out, transport him to our mountain stream in shorts and t-shirt. There in cottonwood green shade, above all smog and flags, his crooked grin could not conceal his happiness. Bright eyes and open hands receive from us his sons, smooth river rocks that he fit lovingly into a dam that checked the flow of time up there back then in San Gabriel's mountains, along a wild and green-fringed stream above brown air of LA's other angels. So my expression of these things is indirect. You know, I mean, it's poetry. It's not journalism.
It is, but the beauty of poetry, as has been said many times, is you can get inside how it feels.
Yeah.
We all know what it looks like, but it takes a poet to tell you how it feels.
Yeah, I suppose, yeah.
One of the impressions that I'm getting is that certainly it was, I think, true for me. Coming to America was liberating.
Yeah. I think I was too young for that liberation because there wasn't much to liberate from. But it was an adventure, a huge adventure. I think later, in the second and third immigration, I think there might have been a sense of liberation or enlargement, like more possibilities. Mm. I think I definitely had a sense that in America there were more possibilities, more choices. I don't think I would have gone to college or got a graduate degree if I'd stayed in Denmark. That was not one of the things that was planned for me in my social circles and so on. It was possible here.
I'm really impressed, Helga, that you are a poet and such a good poet. When you're writing in a second language, do you think of it that way?
No, English is my first language now. German is has become my second language.
How long was it before you stopped translating in your head from German to English?
It probably was when I began dreaming about my mother and I spoke in English to her. She does not speak English, or she did not speak English. And that's probably was, I would say, about 5 years later. It was very soon because I was totally immersed in English. Everything I did was English. My husband spoke English. All the people that surrounded me were English, you know, speaking people. So it just became my major language, I think. And then, of course, once I went to UTC and studied humanities and how to write, it was just something that came naturally.
But to express how you feel, was that difficult in English?
It was at first, but now I say that I can express myself much better in English. A couple of years back, I tried to write something in German, and it sounded really clumsy. And so I gave up on that because I just don't feel as comfortable. I did not grow with the German language the way I did with the English language.
Mm-hmm. My experience is very similar, actually. I did the same thing, had an experiment in writing a little bit in Danish, and that didn't work. So English is definitely, like Helga's, my first language.
Yeah.
Your most recent collection is called Loving the Dead?
Yes, it is. And it actually deals with, it started when my sister died 3 years ago, and how siblings are, you know, we were always in rivalry a little bit with each other. And she was the older sister. So when mother would say, "Why don't you take Helga along?" she would say, "No way."
How much older was she?
Just 2.5 years.
No, that's enough.
But yes, we were very different. I'm more an internal person, whereas she was outgoing and she was talkative. And I held everything inside me. And I guess that's why I can write poems now. So anyway, this book, Loving the Dead, was prompted by her death. And the book is in three sections. The first section, it deals more with the speaker's present and the small deaths that we experience in everyday life. Simple little things, but nevertheless, it's like a death. And then the second section deals with my sister's death, the memories of her and how we acted toward each other, and dealing with her being gone. And suddenly I didn't have that reference anymore where I could talk to her about things mother said or things that happened in the family, and now no one can answer if I have a question. Mm-hmm. So I was trying to talk about that. And then the last part is section where I talk about other people who have died in wars or maybe in a fire, or I took a news story where someone died or others died, and also what happened in other countries. And I also, a couple of poems deal with confrontation between people and what can happen.
The collection of poems just published by Finn Billy is titled The King's Coin, Danish-American Poems. The collection of poems by Helga Kidder is titled Loving the Dead. The second part of my conversation with Finn Billy and Helga Kidder will be on next Wednesday's Scenic Roots, here on listener-supported public radio.